Welcome to the Lifecast. We hope that you find this ministry of New Life Assembly of God as an encouragement to you. You will hear messages and lessons in God's Word by our staff and special guests. Enjoy the podcast.
I want you just to listen to this and think about your soul, all right? Think about it for a moment. Jeffrey Boyd writes about Patricia. She suffered from the effects of diabetes, a heart attack, two strokes. She went blind, went into renal failure, which required dialysis. She had both legs amputated, all while she was still in her 30s. She was put in a nursing home except for several times a year when she was hospitalized, frequently going into a coma for 1 to 2 weeks during those stays in the hospital. Pat, as she was called, was a partner of a church in Washington, D.C. that wanted to create a homeless shelter. Now listen to this. They could not find anyone with leadership skills to pull it off, so she volunteered. In between dialysis and comas, she pulled together a team, got zoning changes in the district of D.C. She got architectural help. She raised the funding. She then helped the team figure out the rules for the homeless people who would use the shelter, and she recruited and trained the staff that ran it. Maybe I need to go back and tell you everything she experienced before she did all this. When Pat died, after the shelter's first successful year in operation, homeless people stood next to U.S. cabinet members such as Secretary of State James Baker at her funeral. She had what we call strength of soul that simply would not be degraded by the humiliation that her body put her through. Now, I want you to hear what I just said. She had strength of soul that would not be degraded by the humiliation that her body put her through. It's interesting, isn't it? We don't think about our soul when everything's going wrong. When your body's falling apart. Jeffrey Boyd, who wrote about Pat, was a Yale psychiatrist and minister as well, and says that half the church, you and I, have a Looney Tunes theory of the soul. Okay, now come on, how many of you watch Looney Tunes comics? Sure. And those are the ones with Daffy Duck, Bugs Bunny, right? And you remember those? And Bugs would blow up Daffy, and Daffy's bill would blow off. Remember that? And he would fall to the ground, and you would see this Looney Tunes thinking about the soul. Up from Daffy's body, laying on the ground without a bill, without his beak, would rise a character that looked like Daffy with wings and a harp. Come on, how many of you have seen that? See? Even these guys right here, these young guys. And we think that is the soul. Interesting that he believes 50% of the church today, those who are in church today, believe that is the soul. So come on, be honest with me. How many of you would say, you know what, I kind of thought that was a picture of the soul. You all are not going to be honest with me today, are you? Okay, I want you to grasp this, because today you're going to understand your soul. Maybe you've never understood your soul. But today, you're going to understand your soul. What is our soul? And how do we care for the soul? Have you ever asked yourself that question? How do you care for the soul? How many of you go to the gym? Because you're caring for your body. How many of you sleep every night? Because you're caring for your mind and your body. Okay? How many of you eat every day? Because you're caring for your body. But very few of us think about how we care for the soul. How do we care for the soul? Well, that's why I'm here in church today. That's great. But I want you to understand that we have what's called an outer life and an inner life. Okay? Now, the outer is the public visible one. Accomplishments, my work, my reputation lie there, right? People see our outer life. How many of you have an outer life? People see it. Your neighbors see it. But there's this inner life, and that's where our secret thoughts and our hopes and our wishes live. All right, now, how many of you are glad your inner life is invisible? Thank you for being honest, right? So if you tried to look across the room and read the thoughts of the person in the room, and one of the things I learned real quick as a speaker is don't try to read the thoughts of the people because I can't do that, but if I get myself into that, I'll start making a narrative about what other people are thinking. Come on, how many have done that? But we cannot see the inner thoughts, and we can't see the inner attitudes. And maybe it's a good thing. But because our inner life is invisible, we neglect it. You go to the gym because they can see your body. But what are you doing for what they can't see? And I want you to understand this because this is so important. It is all about the soul. How can I have a private self that flourishes even when my public self is not? How can I be like Pat and my body is humiliating me, but I can shine in the midst of that? That's because she had a healthy soul. She had a healthy soul. Now, this is really important because Dallas Willard says this, and your soul is made by God, made for God, and made to need God, which means you were not made to be self-sufficient. And it's interesting because I was raised in Wisconsin, and this whole idea of being a self-made, of being a, I can do it, this outdoorsy thought of, hey, just watch me. The Green Bay Packer self-made. But it doesn't work for the soul. You can't do it. How do I know that? Well, Genesis 2:7. Here's what it says in Genesis 2:7. God created man from the dust of the earth, and he what? Breathe into their nostrils the breath of life. Okay? What does that mean? The word soul is the same word for breath. Okay? So when you read the word soul in your Bible, it's breath. So when God breathes into us, we receive our soul. And I want you to hear me. All of mankind knows that you cannot exist without a soul. How do I know that? Because when a plane crashes or a boat sinks, they count the number of souls lost. And what does SOS mean? Save our soul. When you get in a plane and it's about to crash, or you get in a boat and it's about to sink, you send out an SOS, which means save our soul. Because the soul is us. You do not exist without it. You don't get a soul when you come to salvation. You have a soul or you can't be born. And this is so important because Willard says this: what is running your life at any given moment is your soul. Say that with me. It's not your external circumstances, and it's not your thoughts, and it's not your intentions, and it's not even your feelings. It's your soul that's running your life. Some people say, well, how can that person handle what they're going through? It's because they've learned to let their soul handle their life the way it was intended to. The soul is the aspect of your being that correlates or integrates and enlivens everything going on in all the various dimensions of your will, mind, and body. You see, your soul connects your thoughts and your sensations and your gratitude and your will and sends a message to your entire being. How can you feel good in the midst of bad times? Because your soul is sending the message that all is well with my... Oh, isn't that interesting? We sing it, but we don't know how to practice it. You can quote it from the top of your head, but do we live it? The author of that song, "It Is Well With My Soul," wrote it over the space in the ocean where he lost his children to a terrible, terrible, terrible accident at sea. How is that possible? Because he understood the soul. He understood the soul. All right. Let me help you. How many of you would love to be driving a BMW 7 Series? Thank you for being honest, dude. I don't know what the rest of them are thinking. How many of you would love to be driving a Cadillac, top of the line? How many of you would love to be driving a Maserati? Okay. But what's the difference if you have a BMW or a Cadillac or a Maserati and it doesn't have fuel and it's untuned and it's without oil and its wheels are unbalanced? That's the problem, gang. Listen to me. We all are driving a BMW, a Maserati, a Lamborghini. It's been given to you by God. The problem is you haven't fueled, oiled, and tuned your soul. And when the soul is not functioning as it should, it causes everything to disintegrate in the will, mind, and body. So take your piece of paper and take a pen, and I want you to now draw some circles. The inner circle, the small one, I want you to just draw at the center of that piece of paper, and I want you to write the word will. The word will. Your will is at the center. Now, how many of you know we all have a will? How many of you make decisions? You make that according to your will. Okay, so you can tell a kid to sit down, but it doesn't mean that their will is sitting. Am I correct? Okay. And how many of you have ever said, I'm on a diet, and then you ordered an extra dessert? Okay, just because it's in your will doesn't mean that you're doing it. Actually, the will does better at big decisions, I'll buy that piece of land, than it does the smaller decisions, I am not having dessert. Isn't that interesting? We do better sometimes with our will and the big stuff. So the will is at the center. The will is at the center. And then outside the will is what we call our mind. So draw another circle around that center circle and write the word mind in that second circle. So your mind surrounds the will. So when you look at your little baby sitting next to you today, understand that there's a will that you can't see. And then there's a mind that it won't be long, and you're going to figure out they have a mind of their own. Come on, how many of you figured that out real quick? Where did that child learn that? From dad. Okay? No, they have a mind of their own. All right? And then body. Put another circle around the will and the mind, and that outside circle is the body. All right? So we know the will, we know the mind, we know the body. All right? Now, this is really important. But the outside circle, draw another circle, the outside circle is the soul. And the soul was designed by God to be the operating system. To be the operating system that your will, mind, and body function on. So that they're integrated, so that they operate together, so that they make decisions together, and they function well, and they run well, and they can run at high speeds, and they can really perform well, like a BMW and a Maserati is designed for. Now this is really, really important, because when our soul is not healthy, then our will and our mind and our body disintegrate. They're not functioning well together. And this is really, really, really important to understand. How do we know this? Ephesians 2:3. Here's what Ephesians 2:3 says. We lived in passions of our body and mind, and were by nature children of wrath. When the soul is unhealthy, we live with whatever our body wants and whatever our mind wants. And because of that, we become children of wrath. In other words, we don't run by the operating system of the soul. And if you've got the wrong operating system, you can't take a Mac and run a Dell operating system in a Mac. They're two different operating systems. And some of you are trying to do it. You're trying to run your mind and your body on the wrong operating system, and your will on the wrong operating system. And you wonder why you're having these issues. Now, let me just ask you a couple questions here, because this is really interesting. Because I want you to see this first slide, and I want you to read this. I want you to read it out loud. Look what it says here. It's really important. And it because the body and the mind and the will are constantly desirous. Come on, how many of you want more? How many of you want more in your mind? More in your body? Right? Do you ever satisfy this thing? How many of you ate yesterday and you're eating again today? Oh, isn't that interesting? Okay. And here you are, and what is your mind doing? It's absorbing the new knowledge. Why? Because it wants new knowledge. How many of you are glad your kids are constantly desirous for new knowledge? But if you're not careful, they'll start pouring knowledge in that you don't want them to pour in. But that desire is always there, and the desire of the will, okay? So the soul's infinite capacity to desire is the mirror image of God's infinite capacity to what? Listen to me. You were designed by God with this unsatisfiable desire that was put in you to drive you to God, the only one who has the inexhaustible ability to give. Now, if you don't understand that, you won't understand why the gospel works. You won't understand why everyone is hungering spiritually. It doesn't matter what religion they might track after. It's because they were built with an operating system that does not ever be satisfied unless it turns to God the Father and enters through the grace of Jesus Christ. That's why men will strap dynamite to their chest and blow up a church on Easter Sunday, thinking that they're satisfying God because they have confused that they have to have access to God, rather than understanding that their desires are to drive them to God, who wants to satisfy them by grace, not by works. Now, this is really important, because every one of us in this room are beginning to realize something here. Here's what Mark 8:46 says. What does it profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his? Oh. What's that talking about? Now, I want you to get this and put this in your notes on the back of your bulletin and take this home with you. This is not talking about hell. This is not a verse about destination. This is a verse about diagnosis. Losing your soul doesn't mean that he's talking about you're going to go to hell. Losing your soul means you're going to live every day in disintegration, and it's going to be miserable. So what do? In order not to be miserable, we turn to substances. So this year, for the first time in American history, we have killed more people on highways, accidents that have been deadly, by people being drugged rather than drunk. What's going on? 47% of all deadly accidents now on our highways are the person behind the wheel of one of the cars was drugged. What is this all about? Why are we turning to these drugs? Why is it that we are living in this place of this drug society? All right, so because the soul is always unsatisfied, so we're longing to satisfy the soul. So that's why we can get a new job. Watch this, we get a new job, but we're still not happy. Come on, that's the job I wanted. But guess what? You're not happy. You get a new house, and what do you want? If I built another one, I'd do this. You get a new car, and you don't have it very long until you say, you know, the next one, I want this. Listen to me. The Bible calls this idolatry. It's substituting stuff in life. You say, how do I know if I'm in idolatry? Now, this is really important, all right? If you fantasize going down and winning the lottery so you can fulfill your wish list of stuff, you're living in idolatry. If you fantasize getting a big inheritance so that you can have more, you're living in idolatry. If you live in a family where there's wealth and you're just fantasizing about when you get that well, I can tell you, you're in idolatry, because you think that you think the wealth, or you think the stuff, or you think this, if I could just get this job, if I could just get this education, if I could just get this woman, if I could just get this, if she would just do this, if he would just do that. And we live in a constant idolatry. Why? Because we're trying to satisfy the soul with stuff that isn't God. And I want you to listen to me. I want you to listen to me very, very clearly, okay? This is a major problem when we get old. Because if you're not feeding your soul to operate properly in your will, mind, and body, you're going to be very, very fearful of death. Because you think the stuff you're going to leave behind is what satisfies you, when the only thing that will satisfy you is when your soul goes home to be with its Creator. Amen. And that's why people are so afraid of death. And they don't want to talk about death. And they say, nobody's happy when they die. Yes, they are, if their soul is happy. And that's a problem for elderly people today. It's a big problem for young people. They weren't supposed to die at this point in their life. Listen to me. If your soul is healthy and fully integrated, yes, we can't understand the paradox of their death, but we can understand
that they are finally satisfied, which they will never be if we try to keep them here. You see, this is so important, so important, and we wonder why in our country we've got to try to have more and 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 more. Why? Because this unsatisfied soul, we are limited in virtually every way, in intelligence, in strength, in energy, in mortality. There's only one area where we're unlimited. It's the soul. We have this constant desire, this unlimited desire, Dunnington states it best. Look on this slide. We are limited in every way but one. We have an unlimited desire. It is so important to understand that. Look at this next slide. This is so important. So idolatry, if we're not careful, becomes how we try to satisfy the soul. Jesus is our guide to satisfying the soul. Who is? Well, if Jesus is the guide to satisfying the soul, then you probably want to write down what Jesus did on your notes on the back of your bulletin, okay? So I'm going to give these to you real, real quick, and then we're going to assess your soul. We're all going to assess our soul. We're going to do what? Why is it important to assess our soul? How many of you have ever run out of gas? Did you have a gauge? But what didn't you do? Come on, how many of you have ever run out of gas and you go, oh, I never looked at the gauge? How long has it been since you looked at the gauge of your soul? How long has it been, sir? How long has it been, ma'am? How long has it been, ma'am, since you looked at the gauge of your soul? This is so important. Your mate will not satisfy your soul. I'm sorry. I wish I could tell you they would. And that's a problem when we think that the mate's going to do it. We think our church is going to do it. We think our job's going to do it. We think if we have this, it's going to do it. Here it is. Look at this on slide 4. This is so important. My soul what? Even what? Faints for. Why does it faint and yearn for the courts of the Lord? Because it's the only place the soul can be satisfied. It's the only place the soul can be satisfied. Listen to me. We can have all the experiences of the sensuality of life, and at the end, what are we looking for? Tell me why we're having such problem with pornography and why we're having such problem with child abuse and sexual abuse in children. It's because you cannot satisfy anything in your soul without Jesus. Yet we try. Here's the first key. We're going to follow Jesus' pattern. Say Jesus' pattern. So write this on your notes. Here's Jesus' pattern. Number one, before he performed any miracles. Now listen, this is really important because what do we think we have to do? I told you about it earlier. So people strap dynamite to their chest or kill people in the streets, mow them down with a truck. Why do they do this stuff? Because they think that's going to please God. Don't you get it? God wants to please and satisfy you. Did you hear what I just said? See, you got this thing all messed up. You think by doing for God, if I give to the hospital fund, if I give to the poor, if I give to the church. No, you don't get it. You give out of generosity because your soul is healthy. God wants to give to you because you're always needy. And if you don't get that straightened out in your thinking, you're going to mess around thinking that you're doing. So here's a whole row of young guys, and they think they got to do it. They got to do it. And if I can do it, then tell me why Chris Cornell committed suicide this week. He had sold 22 million albums. It wasn't money, gang. And it wasn't because he wasn't gifted as a songwriter. And it wasn't that he wasn't gifted as a singer. It was because he couldn't satisfy his soul without Jesus. It's not the doing. It's not the doing. It's the being. Say that. It's the what? So look at this, because this is absolutely incredible. Slide 5. Look at this. This is really incredible. This is really incredible. So when Jesus comes and is baptized by John the Baptist, the Father speaks out of heaven. And what does he say? This is my beloved Son in whom I am what? Okay. Okay, guys. How old are you, dude? 8. How old are you?
10.
Okay, 8 and 10-year-olds. Can I ask you a big question? Okay, you ready? How do you feel when Dad says, "I am proud of you"?
I feel excited.
Excited. Yeah. Did you hear that? He feels excited. How do you feel?
Excited
too. How do you feel?
Real good.
And how do you feel? There's not a woman in this room that doesn't want to hear Dad say, "I'm proud of you and you're beautiful." How does that feel when Dad says you're beautiful?
Great.
You know why? Because we were designed, when we were created by God, when we were born, to hear His voice say, "This is my Son in whom I'm well pleased. And this is my daughter in whom I'm well pleased. And you are beautiful." And I'm here to tell you something. This is the story of Luke 15. This is what Jesus tells us in the parable. When the boy goes out and squanders his inheritance and embarrasses his dad, and he finally comes home after squandered it all, he smells like pigs. His dad runs out there, and throws his arms around him and says, "This is my son who was dead and now he's alive. Get the fatted calf and get the robe and get new shoes. We're going to have a party. My son is home." Wait a minute. He embarrassed his dad. He squandered the inheritance. He lived in sin. Don't you get it? The Father's story is in that parable. It's not about the Son. It's about the Father. The problem is you keep looking at yourself as the Son. You are. And you keep trying not to be like the Son, but you need to understand you can't be not like the Son until you're embraced by the Father. You know what'll make your son perform well in life? When no matter what he does or where he goes, he knows he can come home and you'll throw your arms around him, and nothing will make him satisfied until he understands that about God the Father. Nothing. Nothing. I can write you a check for $1 million today, and I will tell you, you will be no more satisfied tomorrow than you are today. Listen to me. You say, "Oh, no, no, I will. I do this, and I'll do that, and I'll..." You see, immediately your mind goes to things that you think will satisfy you. But the fact of the matter is, there is only one thing that will satisfy you. There is only one thing. And when you're accepted, when you're accepted. Look at this. Not only that, number 6. Look at this, slide 6. Look at this. When you rest in grace, the fact that God's going to give you grace, and He does want to embrace you, and He wants to give you mercy and forgiveness and grace. And you say, "What is grace?" Grace is learning to live in the rest of God. And this is so, so, so vital. So how did Jesus live in grace? Well, He did some things that kept His soul healthy. And I want you to write these things down on your notes. To keep your soul healthy, number 1, you've got to pray like Jesus prayed. So Jesus took time to pray. You've got to have friends like Jesus had. He had 12 friends that were very dear to Him, 3 that were very close. He engaged in the worship in the synagogue. That's why you're here this morning. He read Scripture. He enjoyed creation. He took long walks. He welcomed and hugged little children. He enjoyed friendships. He enjoyed friendships so much that He was accused of being a wine bibber or a drunkard. Because why? Because He hung around with friends so much and they thought He was just partying all the time. No, no, no. He was feeding His soul by being kind to others. There is something about friendship and community. The soul, this soul fatigue that is everywhere today. What is going on? It's because the gauge is running on empty. I want you to understand one more thing, and then we're going to look at the gauge of your soul. I want you to look at this next slide. This is so important. Significance is about who you are. So Jesus said, I am the vine, I am the door, I am the way. But he said something about you and me. He said, you are the salt of the earth. He said, you are a city set on a hill. You know what most of you are looking at yourself at today? You're here to beat yourself up. You're here and you're looking at all the junk. You're here and looking at, well, I did this week, and I thought this week, and my wife and I fought on the way to church today. And no. Listen to Jesus. You're the salt of the earth. You're a city set on a hill. You are the hope of the world. Say that with me. Do you hear me? You're the best educated, healthiest generation we've ever raised up. But that only means this, that God is here to let you know you are the hope of the world. When you bring the gospel, you bring the hope to the world. And he is here to let you know you've been chosen for that. There's a purpose for our lives. This is so important. Look at this last slide. This is so important. Where is Jesus today? Where's Jesus today, folks? What's he doing? He's sitting on a throne next to his Father. And why does he give us that picture? Because in the Bible and in understanding of the world, when a king sits on the throne, it isn't because they're taking a nap, and it isn't because they're lazy. It's because a king only sits on the throne when the kingdom is at peace. Otherwise, the king is out making war. But Jesus already made the war, and he won. And now he's seated next to his Father, and here's what he's trying to tell you. Sit down. Let your soul sit on the throne of your life. I'm sitting on the throne, and you can rest. You can rest. It's okay. You can rest. You and I can rest. Because the kingdom is at peace. No wonder he says, my yoke is, my burden is. You that are weak and weary, do what? What does he say do? Rest. Rest. What does he tell us to do? Bring your bodies a living what? Why does he say, bring your bodies a living sacrifice? Because why are you wearing your bodies and your minds and your wills out trying to do it when all you have to do is present it to him at the altar and let him be the source of your satisfaction? Mom, I see you smiling. Because the lights are dimming. The lights are dimming. There's nothing we can do about it. I'm not that far behind you. One of these days, you'll breathe your last breath. But when you do, all that matters is it is well with your soul. Because not just your soul is going to heaven. Your will and your mind and ultimately your body is too. And it's going to be perfect. Take your piece of paper and look at your circles. And just draw a gauge, just like on the dash of your car. Draw a gauge. And put an arrow. If your soul is on empty, put a zero at the one end of the gauge. And then at the other end of the gauge, put 10. A zero and a 10. And then put full at one end and empty at the other. And I want you to now begin to look at your soul. How is your soul? Is it full? Is it empty? Is it somewhere in between? That satisfaction. And the interesting thing is it varies and it moves. And And why? Because there's a way to keep our soul. There's a way to keep our soul. And Jesus made sure he always kept his soul healthy so that he kept it in the word, and he kept it in prayer, and he kept it in friendships, and he did this, and he understood who he was in God the Father. And so we have to keep our soul healthy, but I want you to gauge your soul today. Where is your soul today? Are you looking for things, idolatry, stuff? Are you trying for more? Is it always, where is your soul today? Just put an arrow where your soul is on the gauge. And just, after you've done it, just bow your heads with me today. And just pray this with me. We'll just pray out loud. Jesus, I'm being honest with you today. I'm not trying to blow smoke at you, because you actually know how my soul is. And I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to be transparent. I'm going to be vulnerable. You see where I put my needle on the gauge. And if right now you're feeling like you need to adjust that needle, go ahead. Go ahead. Adjust it. Adjust it. Adjust it. Now I want you to take that and I want you to hold it to your chest. Hold that piece of paper to your chest. Just pray this prayer. Just like David prayed after his sin with Bathsheba. He said what? Bless the Lord, oh my. Oh, isn't that interesting? After he tried to satisfy his soul with sexual sin, and it was all uncovered, he came to bless his soul. Because unless the soul is satisfied by God, he says, against you and you alone, I have sinned. In Psalm 139, he said, my mother birthed me in sin. True, true, true. But now he doesn't blame mom. He takes it upon himself. And he says, I got to have my soul blessed. I've got to have you restore me. And he says, restore me, O Lord. You should read it. Restore me, O Lord. And that's what we're going to do today. We're going to ask him to restore us and raise the gauge of our soul towards him, towards full, away from empty.
Thanks for joining us on the LifeCast. It is a ministry of New Life Assembly of God in Sparta, Wisconsin. If you are ever in the area, we would enjoy the opportunity of meeting you. Until then, remember, God is for you, not against you.